from 4D or astro level of Mars. The planet Mars and its inhabitants, by Eros Writes, from a level of Mars. Written down and edited by J. L. Kennan. 1922. Chapter 1. The planet Mars and its inhabitants. Years ago, as you measure time, I was an inhabitant of Mars, your sister planet. My name is Eros Writes, the latter signifying of Rid. But a physical name is only an incidental in one's life. In the spirit world we are given a name in accordance with our spiritual qualities and gifts and the kind of work we do. I came into material being as the fruit of the sacred union of my parents. It is not necessary to say aught concerning their social status, for on Mars all who unfold into a material expression of the Father are equal. Equal in rank, station, and in possession of the material fruits of Earth. After my education had been completed I was, in accordance with the Martian system of scientifically determining one's rightful vocation, assigned as overseer to a section of one of the main canals supplying water from the North Polar Cap to an impounding reservoir near the city of Rid, the place of my birth. I was in the 36th year, Martian reckoning, of my physical life on the planet when my transition occurred, which event was the result of my inability to observe, one night, warning signals sent out from a central station advising the eve of a tremendous drop in temperature. This occurred in the Martian autumn, and I succumbed to the intense cold. I was not married, so I left no immediate family except my parents, brothers and sisters. I have come to your Earth to give your inhabitants some idea of the idealistic life lived by your more advanced brothers. I use the term idealistic in a relative way only, for in God's universe the degrees of material progress of His children are infinite in number. In giving this information to the inhabitants of your world I have been assisted by the spirits of many former wise children of your Earth. The purpose of the information which I am about to impart to your people is mainly to stimulate and hasten into material expression the reign of God's kingdom on your Earth. Many will reject this information, but it is God's truth nevertheless. But on the other hand, many of God's children now functioning on your planet will accept the statements as true, and they will be helped and encouraged in their hard struggle for material existence. This struggle, unequal as it is the result of darkness engendered by the loss of faith in God. Man's faith in his Creator, in the ages preceding your present era of darkness, was sublime. Man's attitude towards, and his confidence in the promises of God was as the faith of a child to its parents, whom it has always trusted. But selfishness has gained the upper hand, and is now man's master on your Earth. To break the chains now binding man to self is the purpose of God's holy emissaries, who have descended from high spiritual spheres to your Earth to teach and show men the way out of bondage. They will succeed, for omniscience has commanded it. It is under their direction that I am now contributing my little part in this movement. I am only too glad to have been able to give the information contained in this book, and I also appreciate the assistance of all those on your Earth plane who so willingly assisted, but of course we are all obeying the Father's command. As life is an attribute of the entire universe, the material aspect of all God's creations are the same. That is, life on another planet must be thought of as being no different from what experience teaches you. All inspiration comes from the Father. Hence, the degree of a race's advancement in point of civilization is in proportion to its spiritual enfoldment. Therefore, the material aspect of life, which includes God's evolutionary and non-evolutionary creatures, is the same on every habitable globe in limitless space. In telling the story of Mars, you must be prepared to believe that, from a physical point of view, the Martians are just human beings, differing little from the people of your Earth. The same may be said concerning the activities of life enjoyed by all of God's creatures. Martians work and have their recreations. They enjoy the fruits of their Earth just as you do the fruits of yours. They have invented labor-saving machinery, and indulge in a multitude of industrial pursuits, but with this difference, their economic system is such that the life of the Martian is not the struggle for existence you have created on your Earth. On the contrary, it is a pleasurable life in which work is as much enjoyed as is recreation. This condition is due to two causes. First, Mars is much farther advanced as a world in its evolutionary career. Second, the spiritual enfoldment of its inhabitants is proportionately advanced. As the divine plan is universal in its scope, the physical characteristics of Mars, compared to your Earth, are, in a general way, the same, with the exceptions shown later in this book. The inhabitants of Mars enjoy blue sky, mountains, hills, rocks and dells, clouds, beautiful sunsets, and in fact most of the physical phenomena witnessed by the dwellers of your Earth. The Martians live and have their being just as your people do, but they are surrounded by a different spiritual and a modified physical environment. They take pleasure in music, art and the study of physical science, but with this difference, the spiritual growth and enfoldment of the individual is considered as most important, and all material advancement as only an aid to ultimate ends. With main points in view, the reader can now readily comprehend the real Martian character, although it may be a disappointment to some who have imagined the inhabitants of Mars as physically different from themselves, or perhaps, as semi-spiritual entities, who have possibly been transplanted from other worlds to undergo a sort of probationary life amid a paradise of beautiful surroundings and things. Chapter 2. Population centers, temperature, climate. Although Mars is little more than half as large as your Earth, its diameter being 4,200 miles, it contains a larger area of habitable land than the latter, its surface area being approximately 212 million square miles as against 51 million miles for your Earth. Hence our globe supports a larger population, about 13,160,000,000 people. Your population is in the neighborhood of 1,645,000,000. Your land area is 161 million square miles less than the land area of Mars. This is for the reason that your oceans occupy a vast surface of your Earth, and Mars has no oceans, as these dried up ages ago. Consequently, almost the entire surface of our planet, with exception of some small areas covered with swamps, remnants of ancient seas and oceans, and portions of the extreme northerly and southerly polar caps, is utilized by the Martian inhabitants. Our planet is gridironed with canals, many hundreds of the main ones being observable through your telescopes, and the art of intensive farming is practiced by us to a degree of perfection never dreamed of by the dwellers of your Earth. Our winters, even in the equatorial regions, are severe, the temperatures at times descending to as low as 80 degrees below zero. However, our springs, summers, and autumns are mild and nearly twice as long as your seasons, for the Martian year is 687 days long. We grow and mature many crops of necessary cereals, fruits and vegetables during the spring and summer months, so that want is never felt by our happy people. Our method of irrigation is somewhat different from that practiced in the arid portions of your Earth. We do not, except in a few instances, flood our lands as you do. Owing to the fact that our atmosphere is much lighter than yours, the normal air pressure being only about 8 pounds to the square inch as against 15 pounds on your Earth, evaporation is very rapid, and the dewfall, as a consequence of much moisture being in the air, is very great. This heavy humidity also tends to prevent radiation of heat, and the temperature at night does not drop exceedingly low, although frost is not uncommon even in summer. As our vegetation is acclimated and adapted to our environment, no damage is done to growing crops by reason of these frosts. The Martians experience no difficulty in living in a rarefied atmosphere. Neither have they abnormally developed lungs. God has made ample provision for the comfort of his creatures throughout all of his infinite creations, and we of Mars are not excepted from this fatherly care and love. Should an inhabitant of your Earth be suddenly transported to Mars, he could live but a few minutes, for the reason that his lungs could not assimilate enough oxygen from our light atmosphere. Economy is a science with us. Nothing is wasted. Every possible square inch of ground produces food for man or beast. Even the North and South Arctic regions, after their seasonal thaws, blossom forth with vegetal growth, as astronomers on your Earth have observed. These regions produce their quota of food by being utilized as pasturage for our cattle. Immense amounts of forage are also gathered for the long Martian winters, when a greater portion of either the north or south hemisphere is covered with a mantle of snow. The equatorial regions are always pleasant. No severe windstorms are experienced on Mars, neither do we have lightning or other magnetic disturbances such as you experience. As a corollary to the tranquility of our inhabitants living in peace, love and harmony, and the truths of God expressed in our everyday living, the climate is equable, the atmosphere clear and beautiful, the sky serene and sapphire blue, the severest winds but gentle zephyrs wafted towards the equator from the more remote portions of our globe. Cloudy skies are rare and rainstorms few. There is no lack of God's gifts on Mars. As intensive farming is a necessity on our planet, plant food or fertilizing elements are plentiful. One of the large white circular spots observed by your astronomers, located in a region on Mars named by them Elysium, and which has been a puzzle to all observers, is an immense deposit of fertilizing chemicals. An immense well is located in this particular spot which gushes forth a never-ending saline solution, highly impregnated with sodium nitrate, potash and other salts. The country for many miles around is covered with a white precipitate which has been carried by the moist air and deposited on the Martian Earth. These chemical compounds are refined and used to replenish the soil with plant food. There are 153,000 centers of population on Mars, but these centers are not congested cities similar to those on your Earth. Every individual has plenty of room to thrive and develop the best within him. Our cities are not crowded and our buildings are beautiful in their simplicity, large and roomy, with an abundance of sunlight and ample ventilation. White marble and metals are employed for building purposes. The inhabitants congregate in centers and, owing to our more perfect methods of transportation, go forth daily to their tasks in field or factory, to return at the end of their allotted period to home and fireside. Chapter 3. The Martian Canal System. The canal system on Mars is comparatively new. The idea of constructing a planetary canal system had its incipiency at the time of Christ's visit to our planet. The Master warned the people that they must make provision for their future water supply. At that time, 10,000 years ago, the water supply was becoming noticeably scarcer as time went on. It was nearly 3,000 years after the Master's mission to Mars had been concluded that actual construction of the planetary canal system was undertaken. And during the intervening 7,000 years and up to the present time, construction on the public waterways has continued. At the present day the system is most complete, but constant work is required to keep the canals in working order. In addition to the gigantic canal system, provision had to be made for suitable reservoirs to impound the water after the seasonal thaws at the poles. To this end, immense reservoirs were constructed at most canal intersections. In some instances the reservoirs are established between parallel canals, but in every case smaller canals, or laterals, always intersect at these points. Many of the canals on Mars are double, as they appear to your astronomers. These double waterways parallel each other at a distance of about 75 miles. The reason for this is that as the Martian population is absolutely dependent upon the polar waters to irrigate their crops, any accident to a canal, such as a landslide stopping the regular flow of water or the breaking of a lock or gate, would mean a very serious calamity to a great number of people. And for that reason, soon after the main canals were constructed, second and parallel waterways were made for the purpose of guaranteeing an uninterrupted flow of water from the poles to the equatorial regions. The result of this was that on many occasions the foresight of the Martian engineers who had the water supply of the planet in charge, saved immense areas from drought. The rainfall on Mars is almost nil and the immense population, 8 times larger than that of your Earth, is entirely dependent on the water supply from the melting polar caps. Water on Mars is a most precious fluid and there is none to waste. Our oceans evaporated ages ago, and outside of the precipitation of moisture at the poles in the form of snow, none is to be had anywhere else on the planet except in very meager quantities. The astronomer Lowell of Your Earth, who made a life study of our planet, called these reservoirs oases, but he was mistaken in his theory. He concluded that these points, which appear as round disks in the telescope, were centers of population. This conclusion is erroneous. The centers of population on Mars are scattered over the entire planet regardless of the position of the so-called oases. It is quite true that owing to the rapid evaporation of water in the comparatively thin atmosphere of Mars, the dewfall for quite a radius from the center of the reservoirs is considerable, with the result that vegetation springs up, giving the oases the appearance of a diameter of about 75 miles. The reservoirs are about 60 miles across and hold millions of gallons of water. The same explanation may be given of the canals. The dewfall on each side is extensive, and the vegetal growth which extends the full length of the waterways and for thousands of miles in some cases, is most prolific. The water in the canals, in most instances, is distributed by gravity, but Rakos is had to a lock system and to immense pumps for raising the water to proper levels. The gates of the lock system and the pumps are operated by electricity, the control of which energy is well understood by us. In fact, we are centuries ahead of your Earth people in the knowledge of the use of electromagnetic energy. More will be given on the subject of electricity in a later chapter. Another source of mystery to your astronomers has been the appearance of triangular dark spots at the origin of some of the Martian canals. These have been referred to by your astronomer Lowell as carrots, named so by reason of their peculiar shape. These so-called carrots are the thoughtful provision for the impounding of a season's supply of water. In other words, they are in part a lock system for raising water to the level of some of the main canals, and embrace also a prodigious pumping system. These so-called carrots, as the telescope will show, are located at the edge of some of what appear to you as very dark areas on our planet. These dark areas are Mars' old sea bottoms, and in many instances have been utilized by our engineers as natural reservoirs for water. Their convenient location near the poles has provided ideal facilities for the preservation of an adequate supply of water. The construction of Mars' gigantic canal system, planetary in its extent, might seem to your Earth people an impossible task. And it might prove so to your Earth dwellers should you undertake a similar project in the ages to come when your seas dry up, though it must be remembered that gravity on Mars, compared with your Earth, is as 38 to 100. Excavations of large waterways then becomes a comparatively easy task. We have no high mountains on Mars, in fact, none exceeding 3,000 feet in altitude. Owing to the difference in gravity, the angle of repose on Mars is nearly acute as against 45 degrees on your Earth, which permits of almost perpendicular walls to the canals and lessens the danger of landslides and cave-ins. But above all, the biggest advantage enjoyed by us in the construction of large public enterprises, such as are embraced by our canal system, is the solidarity and unity of purpose on the part of the Martian people. As love rules our planet, no internal dissension or public misunderstanding exists among its people to retard any undertaking that is necessary for the good of all. It is lamentable that the dwellers on your Earth are divided against one another. Not only are your false ideals of racial, sociological and religious distinctions a bar to your spiritual and material progress, but your political and economic falsities are as millstones round your necks, which will ultimately lead you to destruction unless you, as a people, retrace your steps and go back to the pathway pointed out by Christ the Master 2,000 years ago, when he came to your Earth with a message from the Most High. The pathway is love, which leads to a true understanding of God and the kingdom referred to by Christ. The Martian canals, as telescopic observation will prove in almost all cases, follow straight lines. When necessary, mountains have been cut through down to a proper level. Where the canals cross depressions or old sea bottoms, immense aqueducts have been constructed of solid stone and concrete in such a manner that the water, in most cases, flows to its destination by gravity. That this has been a stupendous task may be more readily imagined when it is known that the width of the main canals averages from 1 to 20 miles. This announcement might seem to many unreasonable, but it must be remembered that the volume of water distributed over 212 million square miles of territory is immense. You might ask where this large volume of water comes from. The polar caps. During the Martian winter, these extend down nearly to the equator, and cover about 5/7 of the planet's surface when at maximum, and as the snowfall averages from 6 inches at the edge of the caps to 50 feet at and near the actual poles, some idea may be gained of the amount of moisture taken care of by these artificial waterways. 10 feet of snow will make 12 inches of water, so there exists on Mars an ample supply for all purposes. Note the question as to why many of the canals germinate has been a perplexing one to our astronomers. Lowell observed that many of the main canals germinated a short time after the commencement of the Martian summer, and for a time it was thought that the phenomenon might be an optical illusion, and the latter theory was considered seriously by some observers until the double canals were actually photographed at the Flagstaff Observatory. But the cause of the doubling was never solved until the receipt of these revelations. Chapter 4. Planetary Economy. Economy is a virtue long cultivated on the planet Mars. On your Earth you waste more than you use, not only in food but in the fruits of the Earth. You are using up your resources at a tremendous rate, and someday you must pay the penalty. Witness the wanton destruction of your beautiful forests, the depletion of your coal beds and crude oil deposits. All this waste is the result of lack of spiritual guidance, a gross materialism, an inordinate selfish greed. Instead of laying up spiritual treasures, you are worshipping at the altar of Mammon. Ultimately, you will find your hoardings nothing but tarnished brass and illusion, leading you onto spiritual destruction. With the Martians, the incentive to live is to express life and be in harmony with the Creator, to develop spiritually and build for eternity. On Mars, each one strives to live for his brother to the end that all may inherit the promised kingdom when yet as a physical being. Commercialism with us is unknown, for no one works for profit. The products of the toil of all the inhabitants are for the public larder and other necessities and even luxuries. As a result of this system of public economy and industrialism, sweatshops, child labor, poor houses, public reformatories, and the long list of pernicious and iniquitous customs in vogue on your Earth are unknown on our planet. No worries mar the life of the people of Mars. Worry has no place in the Martian mind. The wants of all are supplied by the Commonwealth, and each one contributes his best efforts to the common good, and in return each individual is supplied his every want. This is in accordance with Christ's message: "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Chapter 5. Property and Property Rights. On Mars, all property is considered as belonging to God, its creator, who provided it for the enfoldment and comfort of his creatures. No individual lays claim to property in the sense that you earth dwellers do. Through God's love does man inhabit a portion of the material universe, but only for a season. Man comes into material being to express life and acquire an individuality, after which he passes out of material bondage, when his place is taken by another. At man's transition he takes with him only character, nothing else. If the things he has striven for during his material life have been but chimeras, the material things of life, the fruits of the earth, then in that case he will find himself poor indeed. The only real wealth, the only thing worth striving for, is a knowledge of God and his kingdom. And with us Martians, a knowledge of God is the ultimate goal sought for. Hence all material things to the Martian are but expedients, soon to be forgotten. Material wealth is an abstraction. Its usual evidence is the possession of property, which may be money, land, goods or chattels, as the case may be. In final analysis, this concrete evidence of wealth is not real. Money is nothing more or less than a stamp token entitling the possessor to so much human effort, for the real value behind money, after all, is but so much human energy or force, varying according to its quality and its worth. Other forms of property, such as goods and chattels, are the result of human endeavor and may be secured by the exchange of money, or it may be produced by the owner. Wealth represented by lands, which were created by God for the benefit of all humankind, and not for the individual, is the so-called right secured by barter, exchange or inheritance, to use or withhold from use, at the caprice of the owner of a certain piece or portion of the planet. Under a legal fiction, the title to land extends to the center of the earth and to infinity in an opposite direction. The text, "Thou shalt earn thy bread by the sweat of thy brow," has a deep significance to one who has come into a knowledge of truth. Drones have no place in the divine plan. It is not only essential but mandatory that each one do his part for the common good. The non-producing rich man is as much a drone as is the vagabond who neither toils nor spins. The biblical test concerning the difficulty of the rich man getting into heaven means that it is impossible for a drone or parasite to get into harmony with God. The possession of wealth is not in itself sinful, but the possession of wealth is a corollary to selfishness. He who is unselfish will spurn wealth. The individual who accumulates beyond his needs sins against heaven when he locks up his goods in strong boxes. The act of hoarding deprives some creature of his just portion, for God has planned there should be sufficient for all who make the effort, and a system that permits an unequal distribution of God's gifts is in opposition to the divine plan, and doubly pernicious is a church organization that permits it. Only after Christ has taken up his abode in the hearts of the people of your earth will surcease come to the suffering millions on your planet. Happiness and selfishness are so diametrically opposed that the former is impossible unless the latter is eliminated from your world, for only real happiness comes after complete surrender to God. Surrender to God means subordination to His will. His will on earth must be done as it is in heaven. All must be self-conscious of this. If God's will was adhered to on your earth, what a different place it would be. Instead of a shambles, it would be a paradise, the brotherhood of man and the fatherhood of God a fact instead of the dream of a few. God loves all His creatures, both evolutionary and non-evolutionary. His love is infinite in extent. We are all His children. Everything has been provided for us. It is only man's selfishness that deprives any creature of his just dues. Man suffers want on account of his lack of faith in God. Before man lost his faith in God, he walked and communed with angels. He could do it now if he would but listen to the voice within, if he would only open his heart to Christ, for help is ready whenever one asks for it in sincerity and faith. One of the sources of great injustice to the majority of the inhabitants of your earth is the belief in the dogma of divine right. This dogma includes not only the absurdity of the divine right of kings, but the divine right to the ownership of goods and land through the Creator's favoritism for a few. This dogma is the mother of untold misery and suffering. Out of this ungodly theory has evolved your shameful caste system, your shameful economic ideas. Your ancient feudal system of government has been but little improved upon today over its primitive status, for you still draw well-defined lines of class distinction between God's children, lines of demarcation based on wealth and natal origin. With your inhabitants, communal standing and social distinction is proportionate to the wealth of the possessor or to the wealth or social standing of ancestors. The monstrous heresy of divine right is an invention of the powers of darkness and must be eliminated from your world root and branch before your progress forward is assured. God plays no favorites. His love is showered upon all alike. His gifts are for all His children. It was never the divine intent that a favored few should bask in the sunshine of His grace while the majority suffered want and deprivation. These false ideas have been the procurers of darkness, of the Stygian gloom now overshadowing your earth. Spiritual darkness has not always covered your earth. In primitive times, ages ago, eras whose history has been lost to you, man on your earth was in harmony with his Creator. This was in the Golden Age when man and the angels of God walked hand in hand, when man communed with God, and when the Christ Spirit was abiding in the hearts of the people. In this age, man was spiritually developed to a degree almost unbelievable by you. Then the time came when man listened to the tempter, his baser self, and through the workings of the law of atavism, man degenerated almost to the level of his animal prototype. This incident in your world's history is the source of the legend of the fall of man in the Garden of Eden. Man disobeyed God by listening to self, by giving himself over to his selfish desires. He slew his brother, figuratively speaking, when he abandoned himself to selfish ends and took advantage of his fellow men.